This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and we have an amazing show for you right here live at Zoomer Studios. And with me, we have 10-time author and now publisher of ReBooks, Rebecca Eckler, back again on the program live today to tell us all of the exciting news that's happening at ReBooks these days. And later on in the program, we'll meet 23-year-old Bronwyn Brennan, who's here to talk about her debut novel, The Boy from Dublin. Be prepared to cry your eyes out. I love this book. Before we meet our illustrious guests, let me tell you a little bit more about them. Rebecca Eckler is one of Canada's most well-known journalists and authors. She is the best-selling author of 10 books, and her work has appeared in the New York Times Best of Modern Love Anthology, both editions. She was a columnist at the National Post for 15 years, and her work has appeared all across North America. And she's the founder of her own publishing company. I remember when this was happening. It's so exciting. It's called ReBooks, and it's doing incredibly well. What is it? It's an independent publishing house featuring debut female authors. She believes that what's good is read, and what's read is good. And she also says that reading doesn't have to be fancy. It just has to be fun. She's also the co-founder of Can Reads, Canada's premier book review and awards site, and we'll talk all about that as well. And she'll share more on that. We'll also talk about some of the authors Rebecca has mentored, including another guest coming up later on in the show, and that's 23-year-old author Bronwyn Brennan, who was mentored by Rebecca. Rebecca helped her put it together. All of that coming up later on in the show. But first, I'm delighted now to be joined by publisher and one of Canada's most prolific authors, Rebecca Eckler. Welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's such a delight to be on your show. I'm a fan. How's that? I am a fan.
And ditto, I'm a fan of yours as well. Rebecca, as you know, I've followed you for years. And I love that I was there at the beginning of your journey as you really pivoted from author to publisher. I even remember you being in publishing school and learning and doing it in the middle of COVID and all of this stuff. Can you tell us a bit more about your brainchild, ReBooks, how it really all has evolved since you first launched it in 2021 from author to publisher and beyond?
Yeah, so like you said, I have written 10 best-selling books. And I always thought, well, I'm not one of those writers who has to pump out a book every year. I'm not like a Stephen King. And I thought, you know, I'm like pretty proud of myself. Like 10 books is like, I'm good with that. I'm proud of what I did.
Totally.
I'm proud of the books I've written. And I thought, well, like, what's next? And I thought, okay, I think I want my own imprint. And well, so then going back to school at my age, middle age, one of the teachers or the instructors, and it was a little bit hard because when you go to, you know, these publishing schools, you know, sometimes, you know, the instructors, they can be amazing, or they could have written one book of poems. And so I was kind of going in, and I even asked, can I please change my name? Like, let me change my name because I don't, you know, I don't want to think, you know, anyone in the class to think I'm better or what. I'm learning just like everyone else. And I had this one instructor, and she asked at the beginning of the class what everyone's goal was. And, you know, some people wanted to be editors, some people didn't know, some people, you know, wanted to be publicists, whatever it was. And I said, I would like to have my own imprint. And it's incredible to look back, but I did get a personal email from this one instructor saying that goal is unattainable. And I'm thinking, well, you're a teacher, first of all. And I'm thinking, if someone said that to my children, your goal is unattainable. Like, don't ask the question, right? If you don't want the answer. And so what happened is, anyway, so yes, I did, you know, took courses, and I had amazing instructors as well. And then what happened was, well, I had to find a job. And again, my name, you know, blessing and a curse, right? No one thinks, oh, Rebecca Eckler is going to like start from the bottom. And I was willing to intern. I was willing to intern for free, you know. and actually, I couldn't get a job at all. Really? No one would hire me. So I thought, well, what do you do when nobody hires you? And I thought, well, I'm going to do it myself. I will do it myself. And I did, well, this is not so nice, but I did get a little pleasure once it launched to reach out to that instructor to say, look what grit and determination can do if you believe in yourself. But I spent a whole year, and I think this is important for any startup or entrepreneur or even author, is I spent a full year before I actually launched Rebooks, just collecting an email list. So I would do this newsletter, book theme newsletter, write about, you know, my life, what was happening, how I got my book deals, you know, interesting things. And I would always promote other people's books, novels, whatever that I liked. And when I got to 30,000 followers, I was like, okay, now I have the list, right?
Wow.
And then I had this manuscript that I had read like 6 months earlier or 9 months earlier, and it's called I Married a Thrill Seeker by Danielle Kaplan.
Yes.
And I thought it was sort of the perfect book to launch because I didn't want everyone to think I'm just launching beach reads, and I didn't want anyone to think I'm also just publishing, you know, really heavy topics, which is like in your intro, like what's read is good and what's good is read. And I really believe that, meaning, okay, everyone, we all use this, 50 Shades of Grey, The Secret, like, you know, those books, you know, you can say they are terribly written, but if it sells 50 million copies, obviously it's good to people, right?
Absolutely.
And I also saw, you know, during COVID, you know, people either went to the reading route or the Netflix streaming route. So so to get back people back to reading again, so I always say, like, reading does not have to be fancy. It just has to be fun. And I always add on no book snobs allowed because, you know, the traditional media usually picks up pretty serious authors. And I thought, like, why? You know, just because you get a traditionally, you know, contract with a big house, is your book better than someone who self-published? I don't personally think so. Not necessarily. Yeah. So then I launched it, and it just actually, it's a very funny story, actually. My husband, wasn't my husband at that time, he woke me up at like 4 a.m. and I'm not a morning person. Like, there is a rule in my house. You can't talk to me before 8. But he's like, no, you have to come see the TV. You have to come see the TV. And I'm like, I'm ready to kill him, right? So I did go into his room. We are happy sleep and divorce people. We like, you know, sleeping in separate beds. And I looked at it was CP24.
Wow.
And across the ticker was Rebecca Eckler launches a publishing house for female authors. And I thought it was really interesting because it must have been a slow news day, I think. And also, it's not like women haven't been publishing books forever. So it was kind of that really
I'm going to put forward it's because you're a star. It's because you had a column for 10 years at the National Post. It's because you write books that are real and honest and authentic and raw, and people want to read them. And people were excited to see this next chapter. And it's been great. I mean, you've published Pamela Wallen's book. I was at that book launch. And Stephanie Valentine's awesome book, I Love What's on Your Plate. I was just at her book launch. And we're going to talk about the book launches in a minute. But just briefly, what is your overall mission of Rebooks, if you were to say it in 15 words or less?
The mission is to work with debut authors of any age, because at traditional houses, they usually like young authors so they can build a backlist and grow up and have more books. And I just think, you know, there needed to be someone out there helping these authors, because 700,000 to a million books in across North America are published a year.
Wow.
So if your book goes out on submission, and it could be a great book, but it goes straight at the Beehives, it goes straight to marketing and publicity. And if they don't see you have a certain number of Instagram followers or any social presence, your book is dead. Like, we call it dead on submission, right? And I don't believe in that. I don't believe that just because you have a huge amount of followers that I couldn't make your book noticeable and out there. And I just, you know, as you mentioned Pamela Wallin, I had this vision of just hiring and working with all women and publishing all women.
It's amazing. It's amazing. That was a fabulous book launch. And and you were actually on that show on Riverside with Pamela Wallin. I don't know if you remember. You were on, and Pamela Wallin was on wearing her purple suit, and that was a beautiful show. And I also wanted to just ask you about what characterizes you from all the other publishing houses. Is it that you take chances on people? What makes ReBooks different from all the other big publishing houses?
Well, first of all, we work fast, and I also, I don't fight technology, so I am not a snob about self-published authors at all in any way, shape, or form. In fact, I think it is actually in some ways the better way to go to self-publish. That way, booksellers aren't getting a cut. Booksellers aren't getting a cut. Agents aren't getting a cut. And you make all the royalties. Look, I'm so tired. What was your question?
you're quick, though. I know that you're quick. You can make it happen.
I think it's important to get your book out quick now, but not subpar. We don't put out subpar books, but we work quickly, because I don't know what the book landscape or publishing landscape is going to look like in 2 years, to tell you the truth.
Right.
With AI coming along and so many authors self-publishing or traditionally publishing, if you were going to go to a traditional publisher right now as a new author, that being said, your book might not be published at this point until 2027, even maybe 2028.
4 years, absolutely.
And I have no idea what that will look like, but I am not fighting technology any way, shape, or form. I actually really like it.
I think you also choose great ideas, great authors. And I remember just when you published your own memoir, Blissfully Blended BS, Fill in the Blanks, Guys, No Swearing on Zoomer, and you were on the show to talk about it. And I understand now that particular book is even recommended by therapists. That's fantastic. That's so awesome. I also love your launch parties, Rebecca, and I was so impressed by last Sunday's launch party at Stephanie Valentine's home to promote her gorgeous new book, Love What's on Your Plate. And I notice that you always dress the part for whatever the book or the occasion is. Even today, we're dressed alike. It's hilarious. And I'm also thinking back to Senator Pamela Wallin's launch party and many of the others. There's always a theme, a dress code, and a vibe, and you always nail it. Can you tell us more and how you think outside the box when promoting your titles?
Okay, well, apparently ReBooks launch parties are actually legendary now, because we don't just, go to Metro and buy a cheese plate and a vegetable dip plate. We don't do that. We go all out. We serve booze. We have fun. We hire the best fun bartenders. We merch the place out with swag to take away. So everybody, because you know what? Writing a book is a huge accomplishment that should be celebrated.
Absolutely.
It absolutely 100% should be celebrated. So wherever the venue is, and, you know, we do venues at, event spaces, people's homes, bars, bookstores. We do all sorts of launches. But you're right. Like, we had a book launch for Karen Green, who wrote a fantastic novel called Yellow Birds, sort of based in like hippie. And yeah, I did wear like a jean jumper to match with the cover. But I always say also to people, like, you know, in business too, again, entrepreneurs, never underestimate the power of free giveaways, right?
Absolutely.
So we make, you know, and before the author comes, my staff is there and I gather them and I say, we treat our name, fill in the blank name of author, treat them like they are Beyonce, like treat them as a superstar because they are. To finish a book is a huge accomplishment.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that, celebrate it.
That's why, you know, even Bronwyn in the green room was saying to me, oh my God, all the pages of your book are dog eared. You read every single word, don't you? And I said, yes. And I think if someone's going to take 5 years to write a book or even 2 years to write a book, you've got to acknowledge that by reading every single solitary word and enjoying it, you know. So I did do all of that with Bronwyn. And I say mentorship is a huge part of what you do. And one of the authors that you mentored, that you helped create her first debut novel, is Bronwyn Brennan. And she just wrote an absolutely gripping, compelling, romantic, emotional, and page-turner of a novel called The Boy from Dublin. How do you choose your authors? Can you just tell us briefly what made you choose Bronwyn Brennan to tell her gripping and captivating story that is now a magnificent historical novel?
Okay, so interestingly, I always do an initial phone call or a Zoom, Google Meets with my authors. And I want, because I want to see their hustle. I want to see how they speak. I want to see how mediagenic they are and how excited they are. And I want to hear the hustle in their voice. And if I don't hear the hustle in their voice, I don't take them on. Bronwyn had hustle. And she's very mediagenic, and she can talk, and she is well-spoken, and she's the whole package as a publisher to go out there and hustle, and because it is so hard to get your book noticed. So we so appreciate shows like yours that actually do feature books, because there's barely any places that feature books. So I always do that initial phone call to get the author's vibe, and I don't work with people who I think are going to be difficult. So yeah, I actually do listen to the hustle.
Wow.
And even like when I hire my staff, I don't look at their, you know, education necessarily. I look, oh, you worked at McDonald's, you're a bartender, you worked at Loblaws, you can talk to people, right?
And you're driven. You want to work and you'll do anything. That's
and
great.
You're not, you know, embarrassed or ashamed to put this on your, you know, CV. And I find that highly admirable. So, yes, that's my little trick. If you want to get into my good books, pun intended, you need to show me that you have the hustle to go out and promote your own books, too.
Like the protagonist in this book, Finn, and I want to talk about him and so much more. I can't tell you how much I love Bronwyn's book, so I'm excited to meet her right after this short commercial break and hear more all about The Boy from Dublin, how you guys met, and what the whole process was right, and what her process is in writing a book. We'll be right back after this short commercial break. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi.
Hi, everyone. We are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740, FM 96.7. This segment is sponsored by Ashford Cleaners. Let me tell you about Ashford Cleaners. They are Toronto's best dry cleaner with hand-finished detailing, laundry, tailoring, you name it, and they'll take care of it, while always going the extra mile to make sure that you leave with a smile on your face. They also offer you free pickup and delivery. It's awesome. So it's easy to keep your entire closet shipshape and ready to go. Thanks, Ashford. We love you. I've been having a delightful conversation in studio with founder and publisher of Rebooks, Rebecca Eckler, and I'm so delighted to be joined now by one of Rebecca's newest authors, Bronwyn Brennan, who has really written, Bronwyn, congratulations, a beautiful, compelling, romantic, inspirational, and sometimes heartbreaking novel. Why did you have to make me cry so much? Oh, my goodness. The Boy from Dublin, everyone. Before we meet Bronwyn, let me just tell you a little bit more about her. Bronwyn is a writer and a hockey instructor. What? Based in Toronto, a recent graduate of the University of Toronto, she's published short fiction and student-run journals all across Canada. When she's not writing, she can often be found at the rink coaching the next generation of hockey players. That's awesome. The Boy from Dublin is her debut novel. Bronwyn Brennan, congratulations on your beautiful debut novel, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here, and I have to say, like, you're probably one of the most wonderful people to have met me in, like, the foyer when I arrived here. Like, you just have such a wonderful presence and such a loving kind of, I don't know, aura about you, and it just made the whole process all the more exciting.
Thank you for saying that. Thank you so much. I feel the same way about both of you. Ditto. Bronwyn, Rebecca told me that about your book a while back. I want to be so transparent. Yeah. And at first, I didn't really budge. And then I saw her at Stephanie's book launch, this is really true, last week, and it was there that she convinced me that I had to have you on the program, and boy, was she ever right. I absolutely love your book. I read most of it one night till 5 in the morning, and I couldn't put it down. The writing is evocative, it's beautiful, and I cried many times. I can even tell you the page numbers. I wrote them down. Especially during the scene when the protagonist, Finn, really breaks down and shares his innermost secrets about his childhood and past, of which he has great shame and humiliation around. And I had to put it down for a second because I really was bawling my eyes out. Pardon me, guys. I'm emotional about it already. Yeah. That's why. I love the characters and the way you get so drawn into the story. I love the love story. The romantic parts and the heartbreaking ones, too. I didn't want it to end. Can you tell us a little more about your novel, The Boy from Dublin, which you wrote at 22 years old, everyone, listen to this, and published it at 23 years old? What an incredible accomplishment. Can you tell us about your brainchild, the inspiration behind this book, and what it's all about?
Yeah, for sure. So I started writing this book shortly after the passing of my grandfather on my dad's side, who I say in every single one of these interviews, he was the best storyteller in my family. I come from a very large, eccentric Irish group. We've got a big family, and to be heard, you got to know how to be heard. And what I mean by that is that you got to know how to captivate your audience and how to tell a story and how to make people laugh and cry and, you know, remember what you're saying. And he was the best at that. And so when he passed away, at the time, my dad had been asked to write an obituary with the Toronto Star, and it had been turned into kind of a full piece about his life and his upbringing in Dublin, first Bray, then Dublin, and then how he emigrated to London, and then eventually moved to Canada, where he started his family and his own business. And when I was reading the obituary, I had started to get like a lot of just, I don't know, for whatever reason, I've just always been a very imaginative person. And even when I was younger and he would be telling his stories at the kitchen dinner table or whatever it was, I would often find myself running wild with his stories, going like far beyond what he was saying. And he admittedly was also embellishing some of his stories as is. So things would just snowball and snowball and snowball. And I guess that facet of myself never really dimmed or dulled itself. And so by the time that I'd read that obituary at like 22 or whatever age I was, 21, 22, I really had an imagination. Wow. And so I started to build off of this, and I kind of had the idea. And at the time, it was, I think he had passed away when I was just turning 21. And so I'd started kind of jotting down little notes and like notebooks and whatnot. But it wasn't ever like conceptualized to be a full length novel or anything. But anyway, fast forward a little bit from there, I ended up being on a trip with my girlfriend, Starlin, just as like a graduation trip right before I was about to go to teacher's college. And I had been, we'd gone back to Dublin and we'd been up in Galway where my mom's from and was born and raised. And then, you know, just kind of doing a little bit of sightseeing and whatnot. And while I was there, I just kind of had this like innate, like, and I can't even explain it. I don't know. And it might sound a little bit like crazy for me to say like some sort of like ancestral connection to it, but it really did feel like this spiritual sort of grounding effect where while I was there and like in the grass in which he grew up and my mom and my dad and everyone, I just felt like the story had come alive all of a sudden within me. But I had to go to teacher's college like the week after. So I got back to Toronto and I was in school and I was doing these classes and whatever. And in the back of my mind, I was kind of thinking, you know, I really wish I kind of took some time off from university or from schooling and just dipped my toe into the creative pool that I wanted to always pursue when I was younger. And, you know, so I was like, oh, I don't know if I should do it, It's not the safest route, you know, writing a book at 20, 21, you know, it's not exactly financially the best decision career-wise. But, you know, it was just probed in my brain and I couldn't let go of the idea. And so one thing led to another and I eventually made the decision to kind of put the teacher's college on a pause. And I made a very risky decision to drop out of teacher's college and then start writing this novel. And so I wrote the book and at first it was a script and it was fine. I guess it was very true to my grandfather's life. And then, you know, I converted that eventually into a novel. And then I reached out to Rebecca through a friend of a friend, Mary Ormsby, who is also a very well-known journalist and has written wonderful books as well. And she had recommended to me to reach out to Rebecca. And so I reached out to Rebecca and thank God Rebecca liked what she read because it was rough. The beginnings of this book were not great when I first sent them to Rebecca, but with her team at RE, I was really lucky that I was able to get like a proper substantial edit in. And then after that point, I was able to redraft the novel and it kind of became its own story. While it does have the inspiration of my grandfather's life, it's very much this novel that took place through Finn, the main character, and it is entirely his story. So it's a very fictional story, but it definitely has, I guess it's like grassroots in a true familial story. But yeah, like, and it really kind of spiraled from there. It became its own thing.
Wow. I love the characters in The Boy from Dublin. I love Finn and Charlie and Thomas and the 11 brothers and sisters. Are you from a big family?
Yes. So when I say like there's like little bits and pieces that are true and then bits and pieces that aren't, I often say it's kind of like fable woven with truth with my book. But my grandfather was the 9th of 12, so same as Finn. And so he came from a huge family and they're kind of, you know, all over the place. A lot of them are in Toronto as well. Some are still in Ireland. Some are over in Australia, wherever. Mm-hmm. And my mom came from a smaller side of family. But then when she moved over here and met my dad, everybody just started having kids. And so I don't have a huge family. I have two siblings. So I'm the eldest of three. But my dad's sisters, like my older cousins and my younger cousins, are essentially like extended siblings in the best way I can put them. I don't view them almost as cousins. I view them as siblings. So every family event, every single thing there's a lot of people around. So it definitely did have some influence into how I wanted to write Finn because I wanted him to have that kind of tether to like family life. And then I also wanted to play with the idea of what happens when that gets stripped from you. And when all of a sudden you're left with, you know, no one but yourself. And the only person who can help you and help you make it in the world is you. Which is the same for everyone, regardless of where you come from.
And Margaret, the love story. So, and it's such a Romeo mm-hmm. and Juliet, yeah. Anthony and Cleopatra, I could go on and on kind of love story, mm-hmm. Is based after your grandmother.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And was she a very aristocratic kind of person?
She, like half and half. I made her a little bit more aristocratic than she was. I mean, she definitely was like, came from relatively humble beginnings as well. I played with the inspiration definitely came from truth, but then I played it up and it, like, just exaggerated everything and embellished it to the point where it became its own story. But the way that Margaret is very similar to how my grandmother is and is also quite very similar to how I am because I'm essentially like a carbon copy of my grandma. Like, even if you look at pictures of her when she was younger, it looks like me. And we have similar kind of traits, like a bit anxious, kind of like over talky and whatever, but very like bookish kind of thing like that. And so I knew I wanted to have that within Margaret's character. I wanted her to be this regal, strong female character who at the same time also had this kind of duality of, you know, this nervous energy to her. And she was a little bit lonely and hadn't experienced very much in the world yet. And Finn comes along and he's this like, not a knight in shining armor, but maybe just like the light in the darkness where he's like, life can be so much more than what you've experienced. And you don't need money. You don't need whatever to have those experiences. Like, you just need somebody who cares about you and wants you to have fun with the world.
I don't know if you have a romantic story like this one, but it's honestly one of the best romantic love stories I've ever read. Like, I was on the edge of my seat. It would be 4 a.m. I'd be like, it's time to go to bed, but I couldn't.
I'm so glad.
And I love the play within the play, as it were, as well. When Margaret is writing notes in her journal in her bedroom with the cream.
Yeah.
And when Finn arrives at her window after midnight, and it's revealed that she wants to be an author, much like you. And I thought that was such a clever device, that play within the play device, and it made it so much more authentic. Can you tell us more about that scene and that choice that you made as an author?
That's a really, and I'm really excited that you asked that question, because I haven't actually gotten anybody to mention that yet. But so the actual thing that she had written, like that little like opening scene that she had written, is actually something that just came out of my journal that I'd written just like, I think, a year before. And I can't remember what I was writing. I think I was starting it for a different book, but my all-time favorite novel, movie, love story is The Notebook. And I love just kind of like the idea of like that just that passionate young love where it's just like, I don't care who you are, like where we are, like you're my person and I'm going to fight for you regardless. And so I'd written that kind of like opening scene where it's, I know exactly what you're talking about. I can't pull it off the top of my head, but it's like a trickling, fading of summer love. And I wanted it to be kind of almost like a play or a parallel of Margaret's perception of her and Finn's relationship, which you don't get a ton of because the story is very centered around Finn and his journey and how she plays a role in it.
Yes.
But I wanted her to have that kind of spotlight for just a moment. Also because it kind of parallels into my own life and my own perceptions of love and my own experiences with romance. I've been very lucky to have like a really great relationship for the last 5 years, which is kind of like funny and not to get too like, I guess, romantic or whatever. But my boyfriend and I met when we were like 18, and he went to a school in Nova Scotia while I stayed in Toronto. We were both student athletes. So I basically couldn't see him for like half the year, right, when we were at school. And so I've always found kind of like that romantic inspiration from that, you know, notebook type of like, wherever you are, whoever, like, you're my person and I'm going to fight for you regardless, right?
Oh, that's an amazing scene. I don't want to give away too much of what happens in the later part of the book, but that's a gorgeous scene as well. And the gangsters. Where did you come up with Jerry and George, who are larger than life but so real that you could actually feel that underbelly of London and that seedy and that scary gangster world? And I'm like, how do you go from Margaret, the aristocrat, and Finn, this wonderful character, and Thomas and poor James and all these fabulous characters and get to those two seedy, larger than life gangsters? Yeah. Where did that come from?
So Jerry and George are actually modeled after two real life gangsters who were known as the Cray brothers, or Cray twins. And they were very popular in the 1960s. There's a movie actually after them called Legend. And it's a very good movie. It's with Tom Hardy. And it's basically a story about these two twin brothers, and it's a true story. And they were gangsters, and they did everything basically that I was saying in the book is true to their experience. But they were having that happen in the 1960s, whereas this book takes place in the 1950s. But I've always found their story to be really, really interesting, and it is very interesting. And even the point about George being gay is true to, is canon to what Reggie or Ronnie, that's the name of the two twins, Reggie and Ronnie Cray, one of the two brothers is gay actually in real life, or was gay in real life. And I found that to be a really interesting dynamic. And I've always been extremely fascinated with what makes people considered as evil and how people get to that point, kind of a nature versus nurture philosophy. And it's always been something that's I found very striking, especially from when I was in university. And when I first started writing books right out of university, the first novel that I ever wrote was called An Ode to the Sinful. And the whole concept of the book was essentially this dissection of what makes people behave in the ways that they do that we view as negative or evil or whatever, and do, is there that like past trauma that maybe led them down that route where they decided, you know, the world's against me, so I'm going to go against the world, or is it innate to who they were in the fabric of their being? And I think that, in my opinion, I don't think that, I mean, obviously in extreme cases there are people who are born innately evil and have psychopathic tendencies or whatever, but I think that for the majority of people who choose to go down wrong paths, it's generally because they feel that there is no other option.
Yes.
And they've been backed into a corner, and like a wild animal, they swing and bite and fight back, right? And so I really wanted to play with that kind of characterization, and I wanted every character in this story to have some part of them where you're like, you almost don't like them, but you like them at the same time. Like, there's something where you can see, you know, even with Jerry and George, who have this, like, you know, this thing about them where you're like, oh, like, they're just like, they're seedy guys. Like, mm-hmm. they're not good people. But at the same time, you can, once you learn of their backstories, you really do become empathetic towards them and understand how someone can get to that point, and you see the humanity and even the most inhuman of people.
Yes, I really felt that. And Thomas, good Lord, we have a whole show about Thomas.
Yeah.
But, you know, this could be a film, and I'm sure you've thought about it.
Yeah.
The characters, it just really lends itself to a film. Is that something you've thought
about? Yeah. So again, like I said, I mean, when I first started doing this, I wrote it as a script. And so I wanted it to read as that. And I mean, it would be a dream to have it as a film. That's, I feel like, one of the greatest goals. Like, if you write fiction, I feel like it's my biggest goal. It would be like, if my book got turned into a movie, that would be, I'd be over the moon, thrilled. But yeah, I mean, I did write it in a way where I wanted you to be able to really visually see what was happening in your brain through every sentence. While there are sentences that maybe have a little bit more of that purple prose, where you're kind of working with, like, you know, that flowery language, where you can see that I'm kind of working on a more like philosophical, almost like allegorical manner. Mm-hmm. But I also wanted there to be scenes where, and the majority of the book, very much to what Rebecca's philosophy is, I wanted you to have fun reading the book. And when you're reading a movie, you have that happening to you where you just feel like you're losing yourself in the scenes.
Completely.
And the same I wanted to happen with this book, where you just get lost.
I was so lost. My husband was like, go to bed. I could not. I could see Rachel McAdams playing the lead.
Oh, yeah.
That would be so
with that, because she looks like you, and I think that could definitely happen.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I sort of alluded to this, but I fully bawled my eyes out in the scene where Finn confesses about the shame and the humiliation that he has around living in the orphanage. I don't know how you wrote it in such a taut way. Mm-hmm. And there was something about the writing that was, I just was sobbing.
Yeah.
And I don't often have that experience reading a book. Like, that's an experience you have in a film or television. Yeah. But it was amazing.
Yeah.
Are your teachers proud of you, your English teachers?
I would hope so. I mean, unfortunately, while I was in university, I didn't get the chance to meet very many of my undergraduate professors just because I was in COVID.
Oh,
so for two of the years that I was in university, we were online. And then the other two, well, the first year of university, I was playing hockey. So I was like, I was gone 80% of the time. I was traveling a lot for the sport. And then in my fourth year, my dad actually got sick. So I moved home and I didn't really go to school for most of that year. I just was doing my classes online. So I didn't get to meet any of my university professors, but my high school teachers have been like so enthusiastic. I was actually back at my high school 2 weeks ago giving a speech to like the graduating like kind of class or the graduating athletic department about kind of the navigate or the ways that you can go with sports that is not necessarily sports. And kind of, I really try to push, especially with my work within the women's hockey community, I really try to push the emphasis on, you know, making sure that young women understand they're multifaceted. They can have these different avenues of themselves where you can be this athletic person and have this masculine drive, but at the same time, you can have this feminine creative side of you where you are not, you know, tied to one way or one side of your identity. You can be all of these things and more. Sorry.
You know, I have to tell you, Bronwyn, it's also fascinating to me that you're also a hockey instructor and you own a small hockey school.
Yeah.
Like, how old are you again? Like, what? And you work extensively with young female athletes.
Yeah.
And I just wonder how hockey informs your writing, or is it just sort of a nice break from it all?
No, it definitely informs my writing. I think everything kind of feeds into it. You write what you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the one nice thing about sports in general in hockey for me is that you are forced into a position where, especially for women's hockey, and when I was growing up playing women's hockey, it's grown a lot more now. But when I was younger, there weren't as many opportunities in terms of like camps and things that you could do to, you know, better yourself. So a lot of times I was in with the boys. And once I got to a certain level, I would have to compete with guys who were way better than me. They were getting closer to like NHL, OHL prospect level.
Wow.
Good. And I would be out at these camps and they did not want me there. To be honest, probably for fair point, I wasn't necessarily up at their level yet. I could keep up, but I wasn't quite there. And in those experiences, you're really forced to, I always say to my girls when I'm teaching them, I'm like, you got to sink or swim and you're not going to drown. Like your choice is always going to be swim. And so I think with writing and just the practical side of it and how difficult it can be to get your book out there, you have to have that ability to be able to push through all of the rejections and the negativity that does surround the process.
Mm-hmm.
Before I found Rebecca, I think I had something like 65 rejections on the book, maybe upwards of that. So you can sit there and take that and be like, oh, I'm terrible. I suck at writing, or I suck at this, and this dream is not mine, and it isn't going to work, or whatever. And I think I also got rejected from a master's program in creative writing. Like rejected from everything. And I was like, well, there's no way I'm going to get in anywhere. I'm not going to get a book, whatever. You could think that. But I think hockey has taught me for so many years that, like, you know, nobody's going to hand anything to you. You kind of have to punch your way through the door and prove that you're willing to have a seat at the table and that you're a valued member. Absolutely. So that's really where that comes from.
They're telling me there's a minute left. I literally have 25 more questions. So you're going to have to come back on again.
I know.
I'm telling you.
Sorry.
And we're going to go to break soon. And before we do, I want to say after the break, I want to talk about both of your writing processes. But I just want to tell you another scene that broke my heart wide open was when Finn gives Christmas dinner to Anthony, page 256. Oh, my God. That was so powerful. I'm just going to say to the listeners, you need to read this book. To just read that scene. Do you cry? And do you get emotional when your readers take you on this journey?
I mean, I'm not super emotional. Like, I mean, I didn't cry with that one, really, with any of the scenes. I don't know where that scene came from in my brain. I actually have been rewriting, like, a short script off of that, and I titled it Sons of Our Father, kind of a play on, like, our father and sins of our father. And I wanted it to be, you know, very focused on that scene. And it's really interesting that you picked that one out as well, because it is a very poignant scene for a lot of people who read it.
Wow, I'm just absolutely, absolutely blown away. We're going to go on a short commercial break. More with Finding Your Bliss and founder of Rebooks, Rebecca Ethler. I'll say that again. Oh, no, this isn't live to tape. This is real. Rebooks, Rebecca Ethler and author Bronwyn Brennan. When we come back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio. I'm having the best time in the studio with Rebecca Ethler and Bronwyn Brennan, live at Zoomer for Finding Your Bliss. And we're talking about this wonderful book, The Boy from Dublin. And I want to talk to you about your writing process, so many different things. What was your writing process, Bronwyn, in writing this book?
Well, I think I have a bit of a strange way of writing, because I would write usually starting at like 8 p.m. and then I would go to like 2 a.m. So wow. A bit of a late writer. I, like Rebecca, am not a morning person. I'm not getting up at 6 a.m. to start writing. Like, I just would, it would be like, and then, and in the beginning, it would be like so bad. So for me, a lot of my inspiration came actually after work. So So after I dropped out of teacher's college, I started my own business and I started teaching hockey. So I kind of was staying within that domain of teaching. But wow. The thing with teaching hockey is it's obviously an after school endeavor. So I'm not starting my job usually until 4 p.m. And with the age group that I focus in, which is U18 division, so it's usually 15, 16, 17 year old girls, they have the latest time slot. So usually our practices will run from 8:30 to 11 or anywhere in that kind of domain. So I'd get home on some nights at like 11:30.
Wow.
And, you know, if you're playing a sport that late, you can sometimes get a little bit of like a second wind and you can be a bit, you know, wired. So sometimes to unwind, I would actually start writing before I would go to bed. So it would start at like, I don't know, sometimes it could start at like 11:30. Everyone in my house is asleep and I'm just in my room with like a shrine of candles and, you know, Patrick Kavanaugh poem books.
I imagine that. Like, I imagine fairies, and I'm spelling fairies, F-A-E-R-I-E-S, and banshees and all of this Irish folklore, you know, in this bedroom that you're writing. And so that makes so much sense. Rebecca, what about you? Because you've written 10 books. I mean, what was your writing and what is your writing process like?
Well, surprisingly, when I'm writing a book, I do get up extremely early. I'm talking 4 a.m. early.
Wow.
So I have at least 3.5 hours sort of till 7:30. But I would say for sure, because I'm more of a memoir writer, I've written mostly memoirs, And I always, I don't know why, it was just sort of inherent. I just always wrote as if no one was going to read this book, ever. And in fact, I haven't never actually read any of my books either afterwards, because as Bronwyn knows, you know, there's probably about 13 to 15 people behind what goes into a book.
Of course.
But when it comes to rebooks, I also think one of the benefits is that I was or am an author.
Of course.
So I understand the roller coasters. I know exactly the moment they're going to get anxious. I know exactly when they're going to get depressed. I know exactly when they're going to reach out to me. So it's really helpful to have, you know, sort of, you know, an author, because you have to understand an author's mind, which works very differently.
Totally. You're the director who's also an actor. You get it. You're directing actors, but you've also been an actor.
Exactly. But yeah, for memoirs, I just wrote as if no one was going to read it.
That's great.
And I think that's you have to be authentic. And I think that, you know, my memoirs, especially the last one, Blissfully Blended, Why Therapists took it on, and, you know, it's because it was so authentic. It did not have a happy ending. Well, guess what? 70% of people who blend families don't make it. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, while I was writing it, it was the first time I was writing a memoir sort of where the plot in my life changed. And I had to, like, sort of change the ending because it changed very quickly. Yes. But yeah, so my writing process is I do get up early and write, and then I write until I sort of hit a wall, which is probably about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And I also don't force myself to go past that. You know, it's like leaving a party. You want to leave on a high note.
Yes, totally.
And I like to write, you know, until I hit that high note and then just chill.
Amazing.
And I tell my authors, and Bronwyn can attest to this, I say, enjoy it. Enjoy the edits. Enjoy every process. I know it's daunting and it's hard, but enjoy it, because it is a once-in-a-lifetime sort of feeling. Like, every book is different, right? So
Thank you for that. I was going to ask that question. Did you enjoy the process, or, like many writers, did you enjoy having written, or was it fun doing it while you were doing it?
I mean, I had a lot of fun doing it. I'm definitely, like, I generally get called a fast processor a lot. Like, I kind of am moving, like, 3 steps ahead of, like, what's happening. But I find with writing, it forces me to slow down and just kind of be at peace with what I'm feeling. Because I'm also, it's a very therapeutic process, which I'm sure is the same for Rebecca, especially because she's writing memoirs. And I find that, at least with me specifically, I tend to go in and out of my own experiences and into this imaginative landscape that I'm creating. So it does become 100% like a really therapeutic process and very relaxing. So it's really fun. It's one of those things where, you know, once I get into it and I have a story and I know where the plot wants to go and what I'm seeing, and because I do write with kind of this like movie playing in my head, I can't stop, like, until I'm forced to stop in a similar way, like where I know that, you know, it's either too late and I need to go to sleep, or I hit a wall and I'm like, okay, time to stop.
Without giving away the ending, I sort of feel that the book sort of takes you between bliss and heartbreak. So I have a question. Is there a sequel?
See, everybody keeps asking about that. I'm not sure if I would necessarily write a sequel to this. Maybe the only thing that I would potentially do is write like a novella sequel. Like, I don't know if it would necessarily need like a full-length novel to complete it. But because I know that I get this question a lot, I can say that if it brings anybody any solace, in real life, my grandmother and my grandfather lived happily ever after.
You have that sense, but you don't know.
I know,
so it's,
you really
it's just,
don't.
It's really incredible stuff. I want to ask both of you, and I'll start with Rebecca, what's your advice for aspiring writers? There may be writers listening now who may be as young as you, 23, all the way to 93, who want to start writing a book. Rebecca, what advice do you have for them?
I have 2 advice. So also at Rebooks, we only take, and it doesn't matter what shape the draft is in, but we only take fully finished manuscripts. First draft, it could be rough, doesn't matter, but it shows that you can finish a book.
Right.
Because, 97% of people who say they're going to finish a book don't. So if you're in that 3%, yay. And I will also say, you know, honestly, a lot of it has to do with networking and connections. An agent will get 11,000 submissions a year. Wow. Right? So this came through a connection. Mary Ormsby, who wrote about Ben Johnson, her book is called The
Fastest Man Alive.
Yeah, the fastest man in the world. And that's a connect, you know, she was published by another publishing house and the publisher I'm friendly with. And so, you know what? And a lot of times at our book launches, people will come up and I say, go to those book launches, go, like, show up. Like, yes. If you don't show up, then, you know, it's like, what, you know, don't have that imposter syndrome. It's ridiculous. Like, here we are, 65 rejections, and all of my authors have been rejected, wow. Sometimes over 100 times. But yes, like, go to book launches, go to see authors speak, because you never know, you know, who is there. Like, for example, I was helping an author, and he was launching his book at York University. So I went to York University, half to support, yes, but half to meet who is this bookstore, who runs this bookstore.
Sure.
And guess what? Met him, nice guy, Brian at York University Bookstore, shout out. And guess what? I went. We get Bronwyn's book in. We got Stephanie's cookbook in.
Wow.
So you do have to network. And you,
yeah,
and,
totally.
And you know what? If you have to play the actress, do it.
Yeah.
And I often say, like, even ask for help or ask for a connection and just say, someone told me to reach out to you. It could be, you know, a social media friend. It doesn't even have to be a good friend.
Just ask
and connect and network. And I always say to people, you know, reach out to editors on LinkedIn and say, I'm just letting you know I'm in the middle of writing a book, and I'll reach out to you when I'm finished.
Awesome.
And that way they, you know, they will remember, right?
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. A little foreshadowing, and they'll get excited about it and wonder about it. You say you don't cry when you write, but when you finish those last words, the end.
Yeah.
What did you feel?
I think I just felt like, I don't know if it was a sense of accomplishment, and I was, like, happy that it was, you know, completed, and it was, I mean, I finished writing that book at 3:30 in the morning, and I had to give it over to Rebecca at 8 a.m., so it was one of those things where I was like, thank God I finished this in time, right? Like, yeah.
I love that. Rebecca, did you cry when you read it? Because I really was bawling throughout.
Well, like you said, it kept you up. So yeah. I started reading it. I remember it came in. I started reading at, I think, about 9 a.m. Next thing I knew, it was 2 o'clock. And I thought, oh, my God, my kid is going to be late picking him. Like, I'm for sure being late picking him. That's how immersed I was in it. And the romantic part, like you say, the notebook. And it's, like, one of my favorite books of all times. And I make sure I read it every year, once a year, because if there's anything as such as a perfect book, I do think this is it.
Yeah.
And it's by Barbara Gowdy, who is a famous Canadian author, and she wrote a book called The Romantic.
Yes.
And that sort of hit me too.
Yeah. Totally.
I'm very into love, you know, love and relationships. And
love is everything.
You know,
love is everything.
Meghan Markle will say, love wins, you know,
love
and it's
wins.
True. I agree with her, you know, love does win.
Tell us quickly about Can Reads, very quickly, because I want to ask you guys a very important question that we always ask on the show, but Can Reads, which you're a big supporter
right.
of.
So during all of this, and as an author, you know, Can Reads is Canada's premier book review and awards site, and that is because, you know, as I, you know, became like a publisher and getting into it, you know, getting reviews, asking for blurbs. You know what? I don't want to go. I don't have the time to ask authors for blurbs. And likewise, when people ask me to blurb, I don't have the time to do it either. So you end up getting these blurbs like, wow, like brilliant, you know, like who cares? And now a lot of the larger publishing houses won't let their authors blurb outside their publishing house. So we give full reviews, of which authors can then take for promotional purposes.
Smart. Brilliant.
And if any author is out there self-published, there is this sort of thing. Like, you need to get 50 reviews on Amazon, and that makes people think. And you can take, you know, lines from Canary's reviews and use them for promotional purposes. And it's not just because I don't think necessarily blurbs work. And in fact, you know, I might hate the writer who said, oh, wow, brilliant, couldn't put this down. And then I'm reading a book that I think, what? Now I don't like both of you guys.
I want to write a review about this book. Where should I send it?
www.canreads.ca if you want a book review. And we also, you know, are big on giving out stickers, you know, like a Heather's Pick. But it's a Can Reads.
I love it.
We have more than 50 vetted reviewers now. So every genre. So very quickly, we have the reviewers that like your genre.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, like when I was writing memoirs about relationships and these hard-ass feminists or men would be reviewing these books,
totally.
I would be like, it's not your audience. Of course I'm going to get a bad review from you guys.
Right.
I'm not writing for you guys.
Right. You got to go to the people. There's a question that we ask everyone at the end of the show, and of course we're going to ask it to both of you. Bronwyn, what is bliss for Bronwyn Brennan?
That's a great question. For me, I think it's... Bliss for me is probably having the space and time to be at peace with, like, the many thoughts that I have in my brain at all times. Like I said, I'm busy brain. And so, yeah, for me, like, bliss really does come from being able to take a sit back, whether it's, like, 5-10 minutes, and just be able to write or read or do something creative and have that peace and time to step away from, like, the busyness of everyday life.
Awesome. I love it. I bet the hockey helps too, right?
Yes.
Because it's a break.
Oh my gosh, yes. And it's obviously a physical sport. So being able to get out on the ice and just, you know, do something that I've been good at for a long time and not have to really think about it too much. And it's just kind of like that natural fluidity and being able to move your body that is the best thing.
Well, I'm going to say she shoots, she scores
yes.
with this one. It's a fantastic one. Rebecca, I've asked you this question before. What is bliss these days for Rebecca Eckler?
Okay, well, I mean, bliss can be different for every person. So taking off my bra at the end of the day, swimming in the ocean, that's the only time I really actually forget about life. But it's so that. But as a mother, you know, my children are have a 10-year age gap. So it's very rare to have them in the house together. My daughter was off to university. My kid's still 12, 13. So... children's laughter in my house is the best as a mother.
Same.
As a person, it's, yeah, you know, it could even be smoking a doobie at the end of the night, you know?
Like, Rebecca, you're hilarious.
Well, it gives me bliss. You asked the question.
You're going to give me the answer. Where can our listeners get a copy of this fabulous book? And it really is, and I predict it's going to go very far. Congratulations
again.
Thank
you so much.
The Boy from Dublin. Where can we get it?
It's available on Amazon. It's available on RE Books, their website. It's available on my website, although I think I just ran out of copies today, so I have to restock. Type Books, all three locations. Apparently, York.
Indigos.
Some of the Indigos. York? University?
Well, now it's in, yes.
Brian York University.
Brian at York.
Yay,
and
Brian.
Blue Heron Bookstore in Uxbridge.
That's fantastic. And social media, very quickly, how do we find you?
You can find me on Instagram, Bronwyn Brennan, or I have like a TikTok account that I use for writing, which is also just Bronwyn Brennan. And I also do occasionally post on YouTube, which is Bronwyn Brennan.
Amazing. Yeah. And Rebecca, best way for people to contact you and connect with you on social media?
On social media, you know, social media is not as important as writers wanting to, you know, get in touch and talk about the landscape. So, info@rebooks.ca or www.rebooks.ca. And if for book reviewers and to enter, you know, a contest or award ceremony, that's CanReads, so www.canreads.ca.
And I'm going to say Rebooks Publishing on Instagram, because that's where I always find you as well, right, Rebooks?
yes, there's Rebooks.
I'm always going to push your Instagram. That's very important. Each week we spotlight a fabulous person like Rebecca Eckler and Bronwyn Brennan. I want to thank you both so much for being on the show, who are living their bliss. So if you're an author, artist, yoga, meditation, or mindfulness expert, a therapist, life coach, actor, dancer, singer, writer, or really anyone who has found and following their bliss, we'd love to hear from you. We also love to feature singer-songwriters or musicians on the show. If you're a singer, please reach out to us. Just write to us at fyb@findingyourbliss.com. Are there any guests or topics you'd like us to feature on FYB? Write to us as well. For those of you who don't know, I'm also the Bliss Coach. That means I help you get unstuck and I help you do all of those things and find your passion and purpose. I'm also on Insight Timer, number one free meditation app, and all you have to do is search up Judy Liebrack. And of course, you can follow us at the Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. And of course, I want to thank our wonderful guests, Rebecca Eckler and Bronwyn Brennan, for being on the show today. And thank you to Mag Ruffman, Siobhan Kylie, associate producer Chelsea Lockstedt, producer Eva Shabbatai, Olivia Vigiani, audio engineer Giuliani Annunziello, senior editor Lauren Kaminsky, video editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, well, it's a long one today, audio producer Paz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center, and also to our segment sponsor, Ashford Cleaners. For everyone here, I'm Judy Liebrack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.